Hello to everyone who is coming across this video, or if you're listening to it via my podcast. My name is Eric Washington. If you came across this video, it is because it is now April 2023. I recorded this video sometime in 2022, but it only felt appropriate to schedule this video to be uploaded on Sexual Assault Awareness Month. I've taken the time to write down everything I remember for the purpose of not losing my train of thought while making this. Please forgive any issues concerning pacing, rhythm, holes in the timeline, or a lack of descriptive imagery. Please understand that this is more than 20 years of memories based on trauma, so I have written this not only to keep my train of thought, but also to mitigate any mental or emotional breaks I would have needed if I just freestyled this. Please take the time to adhere to this content warning and trigger warning, as this story covers issues of sexual assault, child molestation, and the mental and emotional traumas thereof. So, with that said, I share my story of the sexual assault and molestation committed against me by my cousins, Donnie Washington and Xavier Washington. The timeline of assault occurred on the brink of the late 90s and early 2000s, when I spent the summer and early fall on a solo trip to Carrizo Springs, Texas, in an effort to meet my extended family. In this case, my Uncle David Washington and my cousins Donnie Washington and Xavier Washington. I vividly remember this timeline because Zaboomafoo was still on the air. The Real Slim Shady video and The Last Resort video were airing on television. And I would always watch my cousins play Final Fantasy VIII on the PlayStation and Resident Evil Code Veronica on the Sega Dreamcast. The first Austin Powers movie was recently released. I also remember starting the 4th or 5th grade at Harvey Mitchell Elementary once I left Carrizo Springs, Texas for Bryan, Texas, to live with my aunties, but more on that later. Pinpointing the beginning of the assault is tricky for me. I am confident to say that there was some grooming involved in the sense of testing my loyalty and willingness to keep a secret. For example, Donnie and Xavier may watch a movie they weren't supposed to, or didn't do their chores, or stole something from somewhere, or some other arbitrary shenanigans. It would test me to see if I would tell our Uncle David. Of course, like in most cases of grooming, the survivor doesn't understand. It's grooming, especially within the context of three boys biologically related. I thought repeatedly keeping secrets was just a form of bonding. Now, 20 years later, I understand that they were getting me to develop a pattern of lying to protect them. I think that unlocked the door for things to get worse. However, what blew the door wide open was me asking older males I trusted about things like puberty and body changes. Honestly, I don't know what compelled me to want to talk about puberty as an upcoming 4th or 5th grader, but I can't change that conversation now. As I said, though, that blew the door wide open because that same night I became an inquiring mind was the same night Donnie and Xavier helped me quote unquote check my genitals for quote unquote changes. There are a lot of nights I won't forget, but the first night is one of those. I will never forget how nervous and excited, both nervous and excited, Donnie and Xavier were. Donnie and Xavier turned out all the lights in the bedroom we were sharing, turned on the nightlight in the corner of the room, and maneuvered all three of us in a way that allowed us to hide between the bedroom wall and on one side of the bed, with the nightlight as our only source of light to see. I remember Donnie and Xavier repeatedly checking to see if Uncle David would come into the room as they were clearly nervous. On the other hand, it was almost as if Donnie and Xavier were inquisitive and therefore investigating my genitals. I didn't know if this was the cover for them helping me quote-unquote check my genitals for quote-unquote changes, or if they just weren't sure how to act on their pedophilia that night. The way they used their hands didn't feel sexual, but almost like a doctor performing some sort of exam. However, I'm aware that as a child, I probably wouldn't have known the difference anyways. And again, this night was supposed to be quote unquote helping me on my path to puberty. After that first night, similar nights would happen on a recurring basis. Some weeks daily, some weeks only a couple of times. Honestly, it was like a nightly routine where the normal things occurred outside of the room we were sharing. I was able to shower normally, brush my teeth normally, and for all intents and purposes, wind down normally before bed. Probably because we had to use the guest bathroom at the far end of the hallway, right in the middle of Uncle David's room and our room. However, the last part of the night was always the quote-unquote check after everyone went to their respective rooms for the night. I want to pause here and explain my state of mind. Why was I letting my older cousins repeatedly quote-unquote check my genitals for quote-unquote signs of puberty? Well, because as a child, I thought that is what they were doing. My cousins were teenagers, 12 and 13 at the time, I believe, and again, I opened the door about puberty and bodily changes. In some very minute ways, I blame myself for even asking and therefore opening that door, but I digress. Also, I grew up an only child. I never been around other males I was biologically related to. I had no frame of reference on what was or wasn't appropriate between biologically related minors, but more on that later. Even though I thought this behavior amongst biologically related males was quote unquote normal, I did catch on to Donnie and Xavier always threatening to beat me up if I told Uncle David about the quote unquote checks. Despite everything that was occurring, that threat was the first red flag. If this was normal behavior and, as they sold it, helpful behavior, then why would Uncle David be mad? However, I never told Uncle David, and I still haven't unless he watches this video or hears this podcast. That is to say, one could conclude that in addition to the threats, the early grooming of keeping secrets worked. Also, keep in mind that the only training I had to pinpoint and react to sexual violence was Lifetime movies, Law & Order SVU, and the generic Stranger Danger training from school. I only knew to stay away from creepy guys in white vans whom I've never met before. I didn't know how to pinpoint and react to people I was related to, people not far from my age performing these acts. I also didn't see it as a sexual for a long time. Again, with the point of reference I was equipped with, I was trained to look for adoration, affection, sexualization, and homoeroticism. I was only taught to protect myself from one-dimensional males who happened to be strangers, no one else within no other context. I try to be kind to myself about being unprepared and not knowing better, but sometimes I feel incredibly stupid for not realizing it soon. Add that to the threat of physical violence, and my brain could only compute this behavior as bullying. For a while, I simply thought that I was being severely bullied. And that is until things worsened and Donnie and Xavier started taking more risks. Over time, they capitalized on their successful grooming. Donnie and Xavier escalated their physical violence to jumping me from time to time. If you don't know what jumping is, that is when you are randomly beat up, usually by more than one person. So Donnie and Xavier would randomly jump me from time to time, randomly shoving me against things, or punching me in my upper torso and arms randomly, shoving my face in their buttocks and genitals while they were clothed, showing me porn and pornography, which they would say I would get in trouble if I told anyone. I remember they had these playing cards that had naked or nude women on them, and that was primarily the form of porn they would show me. And molesting or dry humping me under the covers while I was sleeping or trying to sleep. What started out early as an everyday occurrence began happening randomly. Sometimes days passed with Donnie and Xavier completely ignoring me. It confused me, yet also relieved me that I could finally have some peace until the next time Donnie and Xavier were in the mood. Confusion and a fragile sense of peace were only a portion of my feelings during my time in Carrizo Springs, Texas. I was angry, I was sad, I was embarrassed, I felt weak. I felt like less of a man, I felt damaged, I felt broken. I felt like I should have been stronger, should have been smarter, should have been more vocal. I was a child filled with trauma, PTSD, and God knows what else by having to navigate Donnie and Xavier. I didn't even blame them for their actions. I just thought they were sadists. I thought they were just evil-hearted teenagers. And I blamed myself the entire time. I blamed myself for that entire summer and years after that. The most apparent red flag arrived when Donnie and Xavier tried to coerce me to perform oral sex on them. I'll never forget the scene. Uncle David was gone. In an effort to avoid Donnie and Xavier, I found solitude in the living room watching cartoons. I was called into the bedroom we shared from the living room by Donnie and Xavier. Upon entering, I saw Donnie on the bed, exposed and erect. And Xavier was sitting in front of him, facing Donnie's genitals, emitting vibes, emitting energy like some sort of enforcer or bouncer. This was the moment even I knew this had gone too far. I knew that I may be in real danger. This is what I was told would happen by Lifetime, SVU, and the stranger danger training at school. My mind raced with questions, concerns, and fear. Xavier grabbed me and sat me next to Donnie on the bed. Donnie was lying down. I was on Donnie's right side, and Xavier sat at the end of the bed where Donnie's feet were. I recalled Donnie smiling and firmly asking me to lick his erect penis. I was terrified and confused. I had no idea what was being asked of me, as I did not know what oral sex was. Donnie just kept asking me with a smile to lick his erect penis. Xavier was much angrier and more aggressive. Xavier grabbed the back of my head, placed my face right into Donnie's erect penis, and held me there. I tried everything to keep my mouth shut. If I knew one thing, I knew I was not supposed to have Donnie's penis in my mouth for any reason. I recall trying everything to get out of the situation. I closed my eyes. I tried not to open my mouth. I tried to scream through my shut mouth and tried everything short of biting. I remember trying to fight the feeling of vomiting due to a foul odor coming from Donnie's genitals. Eventually, Xavier let go of me, and I used the split-second opportunity to run, yell, and scream out of the room. I was alone in the house with Donnie and Xavier, and they just unsuccessfully tried to get me to perform oral sex with them. I knew I was in danger. My body was already in danger and my mind was already traumatized. At this point, I thought I would be raped or murdered. I don't know how I avoided them until Uncle David got home. Maybe I hid in a closet. Maybe Donnie and Xavier didn't think raping me was worth the effort. Maybe I was so loud the neighbors heard, or perhaps Uncle David came home in the nick of time. The rest of that day is a blur. I was so embarrassed to have my face and mouth so close to another person's genitals, I never talked about it. I just lived with that day for, well, until today. From that day on, I was adamant about screaming loudly and being more self-defensive whenever my cousins even looked at me. I was more physical, more willing to fight back, more inclined to scream my way out of being alone with Donnie and Xavier. Even in public, I was going all out at this point. I tried everything I could to bring all eyes and ears to Donnie and Xavier for anything and everything. I would scream and fight if they were even approaching my general direction. Sometimes I would hear Uncle David spanking Donnie and Xavier with a belt in the bathroom as retaliation for making me kick and scream. The sexual abuse from then on stopped. Perhaps I was bringing too much attention to them. Maybe my new behavior became unattractive, or perhaps they were just afraid of Uncle David's belt. As a result, the physical violence became more occurring and the sole medium of their attention. I only became a punching bag and a wrestling dummy for them to let their anger and perhaps their sexual frustration out. They even still tried to get me to fight random neighborhood kids, but I wasn't having any of that anymore. Carrizo Springs, Texas became a kicking, screaming, wrestling MMA tournament between Donnie, Xavier, and me anywhere we went. This went on for what felt like forever. That summer concluded, and I somehow, some way, got enrolled in school at Carrizo Springs, Texas. So much of that process is a blur, but it didn't last long anyway. From what I recall, being enrolled in Carrizo Springs didn't even last the entire fall semester. That's because my aunties came to visit. My aunties, Melissa Washington, Dorothy Washington, and Rose Washington. It was moments like these where I knew that there was a God. I knew this was my opportunity to get out of my current situation. Again, the process is a complete blur, but I somehow convinced my aunties to take me back to Bryan, Texas with them. I don't remember how. Maybe I told them Donnie and Xavier were bullying me. Maybe Uncle David told my aunties that I was acting erratic and needed to leave. Maybe I convinced my mom, who was back in Alaska, to campaign for me, or perhaps I campaigned for myself and charmed my aunties into thinking I wanted to spend more time with them. Somehow, someway, as my aunties were leaving Carrizo Springs, I was on the road with them. I packed so fast that a lot of the clothes, toys, money, and gifts that I brought with me, or that my mom sent over as care packages, I left behind. Uncle David, Donnie, and Xavier said they would mail them to Bryan, but never did. To this day, I still think about some of the gifts that my mom got me that I never saw again. This began my chapter on PTSD regarding the situation. Off and on, I would have nightmares, flashbacks, and realizations about what happened. Some months I was able to repress those memories. Some months I would lay awake at night, embarrassed, broken, fragile, confused, yet so grateful to be out. This has gone on for 20 plus years. However, I tried many ways to cope with it or even rationalize it. From the time my aunties rescued me to the time I became a teenager, I turned to Christianity heavily to help me heal. I was consumed with guilt and shame, so growing up, I was incredibly preoccupied with God casting away the guilt, shame, and memories I had of my abuse. I was always praying, always the first ready for church, constantly honed into the sermon, and the first to the stage at every altar call. I tried everything I could to get God to wipe away my past. In many ways, I was operating with works more than faith. My pastor and aunties thought I was anointed, thought I was chosen, or that I had God's favor. But I was just trying to heal. I was just trying to forget. I was just trying to cast out my guilt and shame. In some ways, my obsession with Christianity to cope and heal led me to be the religious man I am today. Of course, no one should have to be sexually abused to find comfort in religion. As a teenager and young adult, things only got more confusing. I was still going through the roller coaster of repression and random flashbacks. Not only was I not ready to talk about Donnie and Xavier, but I felt like I wasn't allowed to. I fell for harmful tropes and myths about my abuse, primarily about how my abuse dictated my sexuality, so I kept silent and never came forth to my peers, my family, or people I trusted. Upon reaching high school, the boys will be boys antics of high school confused me regarding what I went through. Allow me to explain. Upon seeing how males bonded in high school, my brain created comparisons between Rutter High School's football locker room and what Donnie and Xavier did to me that summer. If you didn't already know, there's a lot of expression of camaraderie and friendship via comedic homoeroticism in high school locker rooms, at least where I was enrolled. My football teammates would regularly flash each other, swing their genitals around, slap each other on the ass, perform cup checks, and say homoerotic things to each other. Their response wasn't to kick and scream like I did with Donnie and Xavier, but instead to laugh, lightly shove the other person and reply, "Aw man, you gay." So I was perplexed. Other than that, one time they forced me into attempting oral sex. I was making loose comparisons between what Donnie and Xavier did and what my teammates were doing. For a long time, I could barely tell the difference. It took a long time for me to realize that I was sexually abused. In fact, I think it hit me in 2016 or 2017 when the hashtag MeToo movement was rising. And I learned that sexual abuse is a spectrum. It's fluid. It can happen anywhere at any time, in public or in private, even committed by people you trust. It isn't just being held down against your will. It isn't just being trafficked. It's also grooming. It's abusing power structure. It's abusing family ties. It's so many things that people are not informed about, nonetheless are trained to fight back against. So why am I now, after 20 years, sharing this? Why now? Well, if I had to place the reasons in a pie chart, it would go something like this. One of the biggest reasons is that Donnie and Xavier have kids. I don't know if these kids are being sexually abused or physically abused by Donnie and Xavier. I don't know how Donnie or Xavier remembered that summer or what they have done to other minors since that summer. If there were ever a time to speak up, it would be now, as they have kids around the same age I was when Donnie and Xavier sexually abused me. Another reason is that it's just time in general. I have lived with this guilt, shame, confusion, and trauma for over 20 years. I'm not even 30 yet. I'm doing many things in my life that are like a soft reset for my 30s, and I think I need to release myself from holding my abuse in. I need to let it out. I need to name what happened and name my abusers. I need to show myself and others that I am. I don't know what I am. I don't know how or what I want others to see. But I do think there are those out there who see me as a figure of trust. And perhaps if I am more vulnerable about my story, I can help other people who have also been struggling for decades with their abuse. Also, I think back to 2017 when I was working for AmeriCorps. I was working for the College Advising Corps, the Advise Texas branch for Texas A&M. and my coworkers and I were sitting around a bonfire at a local hotel, telling our deepest and darkest secrets. When it came to my turn, before I could even begin to speak, a coworker who I will name T.O. for the purposes of privacy, T.O. interrupted me and said, "Eric, you haven't really been through anything." That statement in front of everyone was like a punch to my chest. I felt defeated. I felt small. I felt like anything I had ever been through was invalidated. I felt enraged. I was so angry. Who says something like that? I didn't know T.O. T.O. didn't know me. I had barely had a conversation with them prior to this bonfire. But yet T.O. somehow read me as someone with an overabundance of prosperity and safety. Amongst all the aforementioned emotions and knowing full well I wasn't going to reveal my abuse to a bunch of strangers at a hotel bonfire, I replied, "Yeah, nothing really comes to mind at the moment." T.O. couldn't leave well enough alone. Responding with a smile, looking at everyone in the eye but me, they say, "I think people who go through traumatic things are so powerful." I could have died from embarrassment and shame right then and there. So honestly, a portion of my reveal is also a big middle finger to T.O. Another portion of the pie chart is that I'm working with my therapist about this. She often asks me, "What do you want the end result to be?" I often battle between restorative and punitive justice regarding Donnie and Xavier. A part of me wants them imprisoned, branded as sex offenders and felons, with their families taken away from them, and the entire Washington family tree exiling and forgetting Donnie and Xavier. Yet I know that is probably never going to happen. People proudly stand next to abusers every day without a single thought. And who knows the statute of limitations in Carrizo Springs? Also, how do I prove this, other than my vivid imagery or someone else coming forward? How would I prove what happened to me 20 some odd years ago? The restorative justice part of me wants my family to think critically about that summer. I've been told that minors who abuse other minors are doing so as a projection of what is happening to them. So if that's true, then what does that say about Donnie and Xavier's past? Were they mimicking the abuse they were enduring? If so, who was abusing them that then caused them to abuse me? Lastly, I'm sharing this on the World Wide Web for accountability. I could only tell my therapist. I could only tell my family, my aunties, my mother, my significant other. But my 20-year-old secret would just die with them. It would just be something I revealed that one time, and we probably cried together and held each other, and what's done is done. I would still have to cope and heal. Others would just get the honor of feeling trustworthy enough to hear my story. So then why not make it public? Why not tell everyone? Why not let everyone make their assumptions and conclusions? I am not that close with my extended family anyways, so what would telling them in person prove? Thus, I'm telling everyone. Ironically, by telling everyone, I get to hide a little still. I get to hide behind the way I edited this video. I get to loudly and boldly share my abuse and the PTSD that has come from it, and no one besides me and whatever services I upload this on can remove it. It's a part of my story that can live forever. Frankly, it's a shame and guilt that Donnie and Xavier can experience forever. Finally, I don't have to be the only one to wear that guilt and shame anymore. Now the entire family knows. Now Donnie and Xavier can perhaps feel what I've felt for the past 20 years. It shows that no one escapes what they have done to other people. People will never forget. Hopefully this helps me heal and soft reset. Maybe some other family members or strangers will come forward, and maybe not. In a lot of ways, this reveal relieves me of a 20-plus year burden that I've been carrying. Maybe after letting go of this burden, I can be the person I was supposed to be. The person I would have been if I had not been abused that summer. I think about who I am and everything I've had bouts with. Depression, OCD, hypersexuality, social anxiety, timidness, fear, rage, panic, disassociation, repression, confusion, apathy, etc., etc. Would I have had to battle all these things if I had just stayed in Alaska with my mom? If I had not been so adamant about visiting my extended family, would I have been a different person? Would I have been a less angry teenager? Would I have been kinder to my peers? Would I have been less cringe and less of a failed skirt chaser in college? Would I be more of an optimist as an adult? Would I have been the person I was supposed to be? Who was I supposed to be? If you made it this far, thank you for listening. Thank you for either caring enough about this story or finding this story intriguing enough to listen to until the end. Whatever your reason, thank you. I ask nothing in return except for you to believe survivors and support survivors, regardless of their age or how much time has passed. Also, hold accountable abusers and abusive behavior. Do the research on sexual assault and harassment and how pervasive it could be. Sexual assault isn't always obvious. It could be hidden. It could be clandestine. It could be, right? In the other room.